How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
Passed off to Hayward, blows by Harden, back to Ingles, left corner three. No, rebound tip by Gobert! Holy smokes, Rudy! You are fabulous! Double team, finds Ingles, he breaks the paint, flips it back out to Hayward, his sweet spot's angle right, he fires the three angle right, and he fist pumps as it goes down the hole! Guarded by Eric Gordon, pick and roll, they double Hayward, he kicks to the corner to Joe Johnson, they double him, cross court to Hood, just about intercepted by Ariza, Hood recovers, back to Joe, right side three, Joe Jesus saves again!
You are Locked On Jazz. Your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 9th of March. The Jazz just awesome in Houston. A mammoth win for their playoff positioning. We'll talk about the great game plan, how they executed, what they did so well, why they look so good, and take your questions on a Thursday Facebook Live edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. A little bit later edition of the live show. I have changed one element of my schedule this year, which thankfully my wife has been helpful of. I used to, when we got in at 2 o'clock in the morning, as I did last night, I'd get up and get the kids breakfast and get them out to school and then just stay up for the rest of the day, and I have changed that. I have now got up, kissed the kids, said hello, tell them I love them, and gone back to sleep to try to get 6 or 7 hours. So hopefully that is going to work for the season. Stay healthy, knock on wood. But it means that we're a little later on some of these shows. So special thanks to my wife for creating that. All right, we'll get to the show. Huge show, Facebook Live. So a bunch of you're a huge part of it. I'm going to obviously address the game last night and then take your questions, which often are bigger picture things that are going on than what's taking place. So let me just say one thing right out of the chute. And I understand why people react to this, but Quinn said last night after the game, oh, I should have figured out sooner with Joe Johnson at the four. Okay, he's not serious, guys. Like, he's known the entire time. But he's had incredible roster unbalance, and just the way the roster ended up put together with really Boris, Derek, Trey, and Joe as the four, and injuries consistently to Alec and Rodney meant that Joe Johnson had to play the three to back to, right? Like, he just had to. So he's known. If you go back to the Locked On NBA feature interview that I did with Quinn, he talks about Joe Johnson as the four for a huge part of that interview. He knew, okay? He managed the roster to get to the point of the season by which he could then roll this out, okay? Like, let's make sure we're not buying Quinn completely on face value on this comment. It was self-deprecating. It was kind of funny. It wasn't truthful at all. He's known this entirely the whole time. It's how he was used with Luol Deng in Miami. But it wasn't something that would have been beneficial to the season. Like, Trey Lyles is not playing right now. They wanted Trey Lyles to play. They wanted Trey Lyles to have a good season. He is not. They wanted Boris Diaw to stay engaged because they need him now in April. They did exactly that. So anyway, that's really what I wanted to make sure we got that out. I felt like I could lose that somewhere in the show. All right, let's go do our pins across the world and get your thoughts on that. By the way, Locked On NBA today has Michael Lee. I thought it was a really fun conversation. I enjoyed it very much. So that's over at Locked On NBA. We kind of just talked about the biggest personalities of the league and who they are, what they're about, and then got into the rest of the league as well. Today's show is brought to you by the Reunited Game. Jazz and the New York Knicks on Wednesday, March 22nd. It's an 8:30 at night game, and it has the Reunited Tour of all, bringing back all the great Jazz players from the first ever NBA final team. It's brought to you by Zions Bank, and the ticket packages are available. We're also home Monday against the Clippers. That's going to be a big game. Make sure you get tickets for that. Tickets are available at UtahJazz.com for that. Let's put a pin in Orem, Utah for Adam Bushman. He's 22 years old. He's loved the Jazz his whole life. When he was a little kid, my dad owned a small AM radio station down in central Utah, and we carried the radio broadcast. And he taught me to say Jazz basketball, like Hot Rod, which I can't do, whenever he heard the Jazz play on the radio. I don't remember any of the title runs, seeing as I was so young. The only real firsthand memory I have of Stockton Malone was watching John pose in front of a camera with his family on his 40th birthday, despite not realizing John's greatness. At my point, I was impressed by the person, husband, and dad he was. My dad instilled a love of the Jazz through much, though much differently than most. My father is blind, so we would connect with the Jazz through radio. We would attend games together while I watched the ball whip around the court, and he would hold a radio to his ear, and we would celebrate with me after the Cowhide Globe hit home. One game, he didn't bring the radio, and instead I asked if I would call the game for him. It was a great experience, and I, to this day, enjoy calling all basketball games for him. I've since made my three younger brothers intense Jazz fans and NBA fans. We would stay up late in our dark room, each in our own bed, and quiz each other on every basketball fact we could think of. While much of my family turn off the game during a frustrating loss, I can't bring myself to abandon the team, so I continue to cheer them on. I found Locked On Jazz about 2 years ago, decided to listen to the podcast during my commute instead of saying music over and over, and despite being a busy student at BYU and a brand new father, I make time for the games, the podcast, the pregame periscopes, and postcasts, since I can't get enough of our squad. I appreciate every day you do thing you do for Jazz Nation, and you've taught me much about the game and inspired me to pursue a degree in information systems. Interesting. All right. You mentioned the other day in the podcast, we tend to go as George Hill goes. Does that put the organization in an even more tough place coming his free agency if we don't sign him, was the question. And no, I really have great faith and trust in the organization that they will do the right thing with George Hill. In other words, if George Hill's market value goes beyond what's reasonable to pay a 31-year-old point guard and would destroy our ability to maintain other players on the roster, we'll look elsewhere. And we'll look at other possibilities, whether Minnesota still wants to move Ricky Rubio, whether Toronto needs to get out from under Corey Joseph, whether, whether I'm not as big on this Darren Williams thing as everybody else, or whether that becomes part of an example. So I think that's I think the organization's just going to do what's right on George. And, you know, and then George has to do what's right for George. And hopefully those are in line with each other. But if they're not, they're not. It's kind of the reality. We've moved into a new territory where I don't think we've had this very often. And, you know, to some extent, that's where we were with Carlos, that we were interested in bringing Carlos back, and Carlos did what was right for Carlos, and he put it to a market value that was beyond where we thought was right, and we turned out to be right on that call. Same thing happened with Kyle Korver. We were wrong, right? Like, we misjudged the market value of where the league was going and what Kyle Korver's market value was, and we let him go. You know, the one I think that was the hardest one in the Dennis Lindsay year was Paul Millsap, because Paul Millsap's market value and his production value matched when he got signed by Atlanta, but his value to us as a team did not. We were in a rebuilding mode, and to sign Paul Millsap and have him play more than Ennis and Derek at that point, and then what probably might have turned out to be Rudy, and also to get us six more wins when, frankly, we weren't interested in wins. That was the one I think that was probably toughest on the organization. You make right decisions and make wrong decisions, but you generally make the right decision if you set the production value of your player, and when his market value exceeds it, you move on. If that makes sense. And we'll talk about this a lot going forward, probably a lot more on this podcast. All right, let's get to our tip-off story of the day. Jazz was just great last night. I thought it was as good a 48-minute of consistent, focused basketball. There weren't those oh-my-gosh moments, and there weren't the ball sticking all of a sudden. There weren't the things that usually derail a team through 48 minutes. The defensive game plan was hard to execute psychologically. The defensive game plan was, we are not letting them get threes. James Harden's going to play high pick and roll with Clint Capella. Our best defensive player is Rudy Gobert. And we are going to take, when Harden comes off the pick and roll, we are going to put our guard on the backside of him. It's why he ended up with four different three-point shots being fouled, because we are playing him on the backside to run him off the three-point line and into the mid-range. And so he is so crafty and incredible that he started to kind of work that to his... I mean, he's incredible. It's obnoxious to watch, but it's incredible. And so we were on the backside of him. We then drove him into Rudy. Now, sometimes our guard was able to slide in front of Capella and deny that pass. Sometimes he wasn't. And you're not going to be perfect on it, but they're getting twos instead of getting threes, and then they're not playing. Then they're not the Rockets. And talking to some people, their other players were getting frustrated. And then they didn't defend. And those, I think, all work together. That if, and I think we'll see, frankly, I think we'll see something similar against Oklahoma City. After they hit 12 threes against us, I would guess that Russell Westbrook puts 50 on us on Saturday, and I don't know if, but I don't know if Oklahoma City wins. They're 3-6 when he scores 45 or more, but he'll score 50 on us because at some point you just make it so the other guys aren't engaged in the game, and that's what the Jazz did, and it was very difficult to do that. And I talking to some of the players and talking to people after the game, like there was moments where the players were like, we got to change our coverage. No, no, we're staying in this, and the discipline to do that last night was by the players and the coaching staff was awesome. Sometimes you're, well, we'll fake him out this time, or we'll do, well, you do those kind of things, they suddenly get a rhythm, and it all changes. And so you had layups and Capella at the rim, and I don't remember how many shot attempts Capella had last night, but it was a lot. And you had all these things were trying, right? Like that's a difficult thing to just kind of let your guys have to see that Capella's getting. And not feel, particularly for Rudy, who is going to hopefully win Defensive Player of the Year and is frankly obsessed with winning Defensive Player of the Year, to feel as like, oh my gosh, someone's going to look at the box score and they're going to see that Clint Capella had this amount of points. And not, you know, 19 points on 9 of 13, and for Rudy to not take that personally. And to allow, and James Harden had 22, and Eric Gordon only ends up with 11 shots, and Trevor Reese is 6, and not everyone's eating at the table. Right? Not everyone's eating at the table. Portland did this to Oklahoma City the other night where Russell took all these shots and the food didn't get past everybody at the table. So that was the, on offense, the ball movement and the dealing with, so the Rockets came out and opened the night trapping the ball handler every time. They really were committed to not letting Gordon Hayward beat them last night. So they came out trapping the ball handler, particularly Gordon, every time he came off a pick. And then this is where I actually think Gordon is tremendously undervalued. Is he just plays the game right. So he then moved the basketball, got everybody else going, but Gordon barely touched the ball early in the game. And, you know, Joe Johnson has 9 first quarter points and Rodney hits a bunch of shots early. And the Jazz... Now they had, everybody was eating, right? Rodney had 14 shots, Gordon had 13, Joe Johnson had 10, 8 for Rudy, 6, 7 for Neto, 8 for Burke, 6 for, like, everybody ate. And that, the patience and moving of the basketball lesson. Then they switched. Then they went to just pure switching. Rodney took advantage of Clint Capella a bunch. Then they went to, and this was tricky for a minute, they opened the third quarter. Then they went to two guys on the ball and one guy on the roll. So the easiest way with two guys on the ball is you hit Rudy, and the guys really started to trust Rudy, and Rudy's earning that trust. Rudy is doing much better with the ball in his hands, making the right decisions. Rudy was incredible again last night. 23 points, 10 rebounds, doesn't even tell the story. He was just incredible. And Rudy is... Now they're trusting Rudy a little bit more to make the play with the ball. And when Rudy's making a play with the ball, he's hitting open guys. And the Jazz, and that's why the Jazz offense last night, offensive rating was a 124. I haven't looked. It's got to be top 5 for the season. Let me see if I have. I don't know if I have that up. I wonder if I have, whether I have. I don't think I have our game by game updated. Do I? Oh, through Sacramento, through set. We had two games of 130 against New Orleans and Dallas. Otherwise, we had a 132 and a 127. We actually lost one of those games. No, against Houston and Miami. Wow, that's interesting. We've torched Houston both times. 130. So that's top five offensive game last this season, and two of them are now against Houston. That's interesting. Thank you for letting me look that up. So the and then the third one is that they double teamed the ball and they took a guy to the roller, being Rudy. And now all of a sudden that's hard. Now you can't make that easy pass to Rudy. You've got to make a skip pass or a jump pass. You've got to recognize it. The connectivity of the team last night to move the basketball and stay together, I thought was terrific. They played 18 minutes without a point guard while doing it, which was really impressive. You know, the ball has, since All-Star break, in my opinion, had been sticking kind of brutally, frankly, and uncharacteristically. And it was cool to see it not do that last night, that they really they got going. That, the offense has been struggling. The offense 24th or 5th in the league in the last 10 games. Coming in, and last night they didn't do that. So, brilliant performance. Really, tip of the hat to Howell Neto. His 21 minutes, the point guard, was probably the key to the victory because he couldn't have gone all night without a point guard, without George, without Shelvin. He really professional battle. Jeff Withey got out there, got some time. You know, one of the arts that fans, Twitter, doesn't understand is managing a roster for 82 games and having these guys stay engaged. Now, that Neto and Withey have not had a lot of reasons to be engaged. And for them to come out and give the Jazz 12 minutes from Withey and 21 from Neto last night really is more of a tribute to them than anyone else. But it is a little bit of what you're trying to do with a franchise throughout a season to keep them engaged. Joe Johnson was great at the four. We've, you know, this is not, as I open the show, this is not new. I could run the latest updated numbers on it while we're sitting here. But we, I mean, we all know when Joe Johnson, and we've I've talked about this endlessly, it's not as though Quinn doesn't know it. When Joe Johnson, we're not home right now. I wonder what telemarketer that is. Like, by the way, this right here is a home phone. This is a phone that you have in your home. And it's an incredible, incredible thing. And it's completely unnecessary. We pay lots of money for it so that telemarketers can call us with regularity. That's what that is. That's a home phone, it's called. That's what it's called. And it's really weird. It's only allowed to be inside your house. Seems really stupid, doesn't it? Yeah, so it's true. Like, so they have this phone, and it only is allowed to move inside of your home. Yeah, we have one of those. We pay for one of those. Why? I don't know. We do at least use the internet version. With Joe Johnson, Rudy Gobert on the floor, Boris Diaw, Trey Lyles, Derek Favors off. So in other words, now you have Joe Johnson at the four. The Jazz offense is a 116.1. That'd be number one in the league. The defense is a 99.5. That'd be number one in the league. And the differential is a plus 16.6. Okay? Like, it's really good. It's really, really good. The interesting one on it, just like, I think Joe Ingles, of all interesting things, is the one who benefits the most. Nope, not anymore. Rudy Gobert, when this group is on the floor, so far this year, Rudy Gobert shoots 67%. It's pretty close to his season, frankly, at 65, but he's 58 of 87. Dante, when playing with that group, shoots 51%. Gordon Hayward is actually off his season numbers, 40. This is interesting because what this tells you is that some of this is sustainable. Gordon Hayward is at 48% and 34% from three. Nothing crazy. George Hill's at 45 and 39. Joe Ingles is shooting 50% from three when Joe Johnson is at the four this year. 18 of 36. Joe Johnson is shooting 44% from three when Joe Johnson's at the four this year with Rudy Gobert. And Howell Neto, Rodney Hood has not. Actually, Rodney Hood's not very good in these circumstances. Interesting, 38%. So I actually don't – what usually what happens when you run these kind of numbers and get this detailed and you have somebody who's got an offensive rating of what they do of 116, what ends up happening is you look at it and you say, oh, wow, that is totally unsustainable to have these kind of numbers hold. And the exact opposite is true here. The numbers are totally sustainable. Now, what's interesting and worth noting on this, by the way, is that still all seems to stem to me to Rudy Gobert, because when Derek Favors is on the floor, it's not good. So when Derek Favors and Joe Johnson are combined, it's not good. This is the one concern moving forward, that Derek Favors' actually value right now is playing the four with Rudy Gobert. When he's playing the five with Joe Johnson, the four, it's not good. The defensive rating is 126. I mean, it can't stop anyone. The offense is okay at 112, but they haven't been able to stop anyone. Offensively, and then the question is who they played with. And Joe Johnson doesn't get the three looks. Joe Johnson only has 9 three looks in 82 minutes in that lineup. It's only played 82 minutes together. It has been on the floor for 16 with Mac, 11 with Neto. George Hill's only played 33 of those minutes. Gordon's only played half of those minutes. So, I mean, it's worth probably just doing a quick let's. And now I'm going to shrink that sample size down even further. Now, if Gordon's on the floor, is it any good? And I think, you know, we're into such small sample sizes, you still got to roll this lineup out. But no, it's even worse. The defensive rating's a 140. So, wow. So that, you know, that's a big issue. All right, let's get to, if you want to advertise on Locked On Jazz, your sponsorship be here for the playoff run. Your sponsorship could air right here and right now and reach 97% male audience. You could see, hey, sorry, one of my good friends just made me laugh. Shannon, you got me again. You could, your audience is going to be about 97% male and my high school friend Shannon, who's in San Francisco and not male. And you could get about 77% of the audience between 25 and 54 and about the same between 18 and 44. Some days it's actually looking up to be in the mid-80s, that area. So it's right in your demographic if you want the male audience. Passion point advertising. That's why podcasting has been so successful. Email me at dlocks09@gmail.com. dlocks09@gmail.com. We can talk about what we can do for your company and your sponsorship right there. All right, let's go to the Locked On Facebook Live questions. I just saw Gordon block James Harden. Wow, so how are they ahead of the Thunder? And where? All right, okay. I don't really understand that question. By the way, standings, we're still three back. We do have the tiebreaker. The Rockets would really have to have a colossal fade for us to catch them. I think that's unlikely. The big story last night, though, is the Clippers losing again, and we're now 2.5. Now, 2.5 up, and we play the Clippers 2 more times. So the question really in the Clippers is if there's something wrong. Dave Fizdale went off in Memphis about his team, and Oklahoma City's lost 4 in a row and plays the Spurs tonight. So that's what's probably most interesting. And then, frankly, the Warriors losing last night are only a game up in the loss column on the Spurs and play them 2 more times. Like, the Warriors, I think, may end up being the 2 seed here very quickly. And the Spurs the 1. By the way, if I can dream this thing out, can I get Houston, Oklahoma City in the first round so I can have James Harden against Russell Westbrook? And then I'll go for a Russell Westbrook upset so that I could have Golden State, Oklahoma City in the second? Or do I just get Golden State, Oklahoma City, Russell Westbrook versus Kevin Durant in the first round? Blow your mind. Oh, that would be insane. Can Trey Lyles become who Joe Johnson is at the four? I mean, Joe Johnson's a 7-time All-Star, top 10 in like all sorts of categories, 50 of all-time historical categories. I think that's a lot to ask. Can Trey Lyles become a really, really good stretch four? Yeah, his shot's off. Remember he used to do this with his shot? He doesn't do that anymore, and I wonder if fixing that has caused him to lose some comfort and confidence when he plays less. I think Trey Lyles will be fine. He's in a horrific sophomore slump. And I mean, I don't want to say he's done for the year, but like he just needs, I've talked to a bunch of NBA players about this when numerous times in the 20 whatever years I've been doing this. He just needs to get away from the game and get an off season and go take 3 weeks off and then reinvigorate his love for the game again and then just work. He's a worker, so we'll be fine in that regard. And his role will be bigger and bigger every year. This year, we're really good, so he doesn't get a lot of time as a second-year player. There aren't a lot of second-year players getting major minutes on good teams right now. And it's caused him – he's in a horrific slump, right? Like, it's sad. It's hard to see. And, you know, for him, this is really, really hard. It's the hardest thing he's ever dealt with in his entire life. It's probably not that hard in, like, the concept of life, but he doesn't know that. He's 21 years old, and, like, his is what he wants to do, and he wants to be an all-star, and he wants to be great, and he's not great right now. He's never struggled in his life. He's a Indiana State Player of the Year once, if not twice. He's the McDonald's All-American. He goes to Kentucky. They lose one game his entire career to Wisconsin. That's, like, the toughest thing that's probably ever happened to him in his life is they lost in the Final Four, like, because he's awesome. And basketball-wise, and then I don't know about his real life, but his parents are incredibly awesome, so I'd be really surprised if he had a lot of huge life. His dad's amazingly supportive. His mom's sharp as a tack and just cool energy, and I'd be really stunned if he's had major, I think he's been loved every day. I don't want to dig into it too much, but, like, this is hard. If you're 21 years old and you're struggling for the first time in your life at anything, this is really hard. You know, like, I think, like, one of the keys to parenting is to building up resiliency. But if your kid's so damn good that he doesn't ever have he doesn't ever have anything to fail at, it's hard to build resiliency. So he's learning resiliency at 21 years old in a really tough, spotlighted circumstance where we're talking about him, right? Like, so not only is he not very good right now, but now we're talking about him. And then there's a bunch of assholes around everywhere that decide to go, tweet at him and tell him he sucks. Like, great. Super world to live in right now if you're a 21-year-old athlete and you're not playing well. I just have moved it off, right? Like, okay, Trey Lyles, 2016-17 will be the year we look back as like, oh, wow, that was really hard for him, and I think he'll move forward and fine. I have not lost any faith in how good I think he's going to be. That was the next question. Matt Moon wants to know, can I introduce him to Joe Ingles? He's moved on to Jeff Withey, I thought, for a while. The Jazz are a better team than Thunder. That's why we're sitting at fourth in the conference, and they're at seventh. Yeah? Okay. Sure. What does the hashtag take beep and note mean? I see Gobert using it all the time. That is a question that could only be asked in Utah. If Trevor is truthful, that's almost as good as the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air pin. That, at the 26-20 mark of the podcast, probably a little bit more by the time I put the opens on it, so maybe the 27-minute mark, might be my top five moment in the history, and maybe, if this is truthful, and I'm going to go with it, when people ask me if it's different hosting shows in Utah, that'll be the answer. Jazz opponents always look like they went 10 rounds with a bear after every game. Do you think the injuries have been dealing with are due to our physical playing style, and how can that be addressed? I don't know the answer to that, Skyler. The bigger question you're asking is there something systemic that's taking place in our organization that's leading to the amount of games missed? And that is something that, frankly, Dennis Lindsay and his crew have to, Brian Zettler's trainer and Jeff Watkinson as our kind of coach into that stuff, and Mark McCowan is, like, they are probably investigating that. They're great. All of them are great at what they do. So I'm sure they're investigating this deeply every minute to try to figure out, is there something systemic? Is there something cultural? Is it something style? I hadn't thought about that. That's an interesting way to look at it. But that is what they're analyzing every single day. I'm sure in a huge offseason project to figure out why now for 2 or 3 years in a row. You know, I remember when Don Nelson was the head coach of the Warriors, that they played at a tempo that was 2 or 3 or 4 possessions faster than anyone else in the league. And they had a huge amount of injuries. And then all of a sudden, people started writing articles, which I thought were really, this was way long time ago, really interesting. That, hey, wait a sec, if you're playing 4 more possessions a game for 82 games, you're playing 360 more runs up and down the floor in a game, you're playing an average of 4 games more than everybody else in the NBA, maybe that's why you're getting injured. I thought it was really interesting. Now, is ours that we're pounding and setting more pit? I don't know. But it's a great question. Do you think we could beat Golden State in a playoff series? I doubt it. I don't know if we can get a game. Honestly. They're like historically great. Before the injury, their plus minus and their differential might have been the biggest plus minus in the history of the game. You know, and they've won a title and been to a final, so they know how to do it. We keep hearing about the Jazz subpar record against teams above 500. What are other playoff teams' records? They're better, considerably. Let me see if I can get that for you. Now, Quinn will also point out astutely that let's go find out who was healthy and who wasn't. But the Warriors are 25-8 against teams above 500. Spurs are 21-7. Rockets are now 18-17. Clippers are 18-12. Below 500 in the West, Memphis is 16-17, so one below 500. Oklahoma City is 14-18. We're 11-17. Denver's 11-20. Over in the East, Cleveland's 22-10. Washington's 19-15. Boston's 18-15. Toronto's 17-14. And then Atlanta's 500, and everybody else is below, except for Chicago, who strangely is 17-15. By the way, if you watch what's going on over in the East, I mean, I don't know if anybody cares because it's the East. But Detroit is now 31-33 and in the seventh spot. That'd be nice, wouldn't it? By the way, we would be tied for second with Boston. Detroit or Chicago's 31-33 and in eighth, and Miami, stunningly, is now a half game out of the playoffs, and Milwaukee has won four in a row and is a half game out of the playoffs. Pretty interesting, actually. We're going to go see a bunch of those teams, and those are big games for them. We see Detroit, who's in seventh, Cleveland, who's one, Chicago, who's in eighth, and Indiana, who's in sixth, coming up on our next road trip. How awesome is it to know the team is going to be back in the playoffs and should be competitive regardless of seed or matchup? It beats. So no, I think it's awesome. Like, it's really cool. Like, I appreciate you bringing that up, Nate. I think we bypassed that somewhere this year where we just got so good we start worrying about seeding. Like, how cool is it to have a team that's 41-24 that's won 63% of their games? I mean, that's an incredible number. And when, like, the year started, people were like, oh, you might win 50. I thought people were insane. We might win 50. Winning 50 is incredibly hard in this league. It's really cool. And with what we've gone through, it's just awesome. I tell everybody, like, I have the best job in the world. I got the best relationship with the staff. I got the best fan base. And my team's good. My wife's supportive. Like, the world is incredible right now. With the Jazz 4.5 up on Memphis and 5.5 on OKC, is that what it is now? Is that right? Yeah. Okay. With 17 left, do you think we've locked up 4 or 5 matchup with the Clippers, or does schedule difficulty still leave us some vulnerability? I have not looked at it, but those numbers feel big, right? Just, and I look at the loss column. So we're 4 on Memphis and loss column. The problem is we don't have the tiebreaker. So we're really 3. So, you know, we do have a tough schedule. I don't think we go 500 the rest of the way. But let's pretend something kind of goes askew for a second. And in our final, what do we have left? 17 games. So let's say we go 9-8 the rest of the way and get to 50, which is actually where I project us. So no, that's like, well, we got one last night. I didn't think we were going to get, but that's about actually what I think we might do. So we go 9-8 the rest of the way and we get to 50. The question then is, can Memphis go 14-6? Right? I don't think so. You know, they've been 500 since January 1st. That would have to be quite a turn of events. And can Oklahoma, now, let's say we suddenly go 7 wins the rest of the way to 48. And so we go 7-10 the rest of the way. Now you're talking, right? But even then, Memphis has still got to go win 12 of their final 18, right? Yeah, it feels like a lot. It does feel like we're kind of in that 4-5 setting right now pretty well. And hopefully 4. 4 is big for us. Really big for us. Skyler wants to know, what point do we decide Favors can't stay healthy and get starter minutes and we just put him off the bench behind Joe Johnson? I don't think ever. For two reasons. One, I think Derek's career has earned him the right to start. Second, as I talked about, he's not playing great as the center. We're not very good with him as the center. I think this is the number one issue for us going through in the playoffs is, and if you've listened to this show, I've said this for the whole entire year. Like, this has been the number one issue for me all year long, is can we defend when Gobert's off the floor? Right now, statistically, this is illogical. Statistically, I would tell you we should either play Jeff Withey or we should play, like, Joe Johnson at center. Or maybe Boris Diaw. And just decide that when Gobert's off the floor, we're just going so small and spread that you really have to adjust to us. Because we are not defending at all when Derek Favors is at the center right now. And that this is not a criticism of, this is the reality of what poor Derek's gone through this year. I'll pull up the number right now. And it probably starts, you know, we probably could start looking at, you know, taking, okay, Trey Lyles is not very good defensively. So here, I'll play around with it for a second. Let's do this together. Let's play around. So Derek Favors on the floor, Rudy Gobert off the floor. Our defensive rating is a 106.1. So it's not terrible, but it's not good. Like, that's 20th in the NBA. When they're both on the floor together, they're the number one twosome in the NBA. They're incredible together. All right, so now let's see what happens. Let's say it's Boris Diaw on the floor with Derek Favors. Now the defensive rating is a 105.9 and the offense is a 106.7. Okay, now we're on to something that might work. Okay? Let's say it's not Boris Diaw. Let's say it's Trey Lyles. The defense rating actually is pretty good. It's a 103.9, but the offense is terrible, so they're minus 5. So it's really, right now, what we just kind of found is that Favors with Joe Johnson's not a great match at the power forward position. That's not a great match. But actually, I thought, you know, the coaching staff's always thought that Favors and Diaw would be a really good match. It is. And actually, let me take one other note on this. If Joe Johnson's now a 4, so I know that Joe Johnson's not a 4 because Joe Johnson and Boris Diaw together has been really bad. Now I'm on to something. Boris Diaw and Derek, this is interesting. This has been worth it. Derek Favors and Boris Diaw together is a 102.5 defensive rating and a 110 offense for an 8.3. If Joe Johnson is off the floor. It's when they did this with Joe Johnson, the 3 earlier this year, that was really a problem. It's only played 83 minutes together. But that's a pretty good little find. So now we're weaving our way into where Derek Favors can be successful. With Boris, ball mover, floor stretcher, good fundamental player. But Joe Johnson's gone, so you need another athlete at the 3. All right, that's progress. All right, we need to wrap this show up at some point. We've gone for 36 minutes. Though I'm in a good mood, I could hang out forever, and I got my sleep. You're the only one I know who believes Exum is committing these fouls and not being poorly officiated. He's committing the fouls. I mean, the love and hope for Dante by our fan base is completely ignoring what they're watching. That's the only way I can talk about it. I think he's getting robbed going to the basket. When he goes to the basket aggressively and gets hit, I don't think he's getting calls. But he reaches in every single time. Okay, probably not every single time, but almost every single time. He's reaching in. His hands are in. You cannot, forearm, yes. Hand, no. Right? Hand, no. Forearm, yes. The minute you put your hand out, it's a foul. You make any contact out, it's a hand check, it's a foul. He does it all the time. He's off balance. I think he'll fix this when he has an off season to get stronger and get better strength in his lower body. I think he'll stop doing it. But last night he committed all of them. Like, Lou Williams is tough. But he commits him. He's off balance, so he lurches and does it. If Favors' knee is not right going to the playoffs, do we match up better against... We match up better against Houston, guys. It's clear. I mean, we match up really, really well against Houston, and we match up terribly against the Clippers. That's the next two games against the Clippers are really important. I would not compare Joel Embiid to Brandon Roy. I'm going fast forward here for a second. Is Houston really that good, or do they bore their opponents to sleep with the trips to the line? They're good. If we re-sign George Hill for a four-year deal, I don't know what Don – I cannot – with the money that we'd have to pay George Hill, I would have to say I think that be hard for me to understand how you're keeping Dante. I guess I would just – you know, I could be wrong, right? I might not understand the salary structure, but Dante becomes – starts to get paid along the way in the process, and I'd have to look at it. Like, if you're paying – if you have to pay George – depends what you know what. Let's, so if George gets the $28 million he wants, and now you can you pay 32 of your $100 million for your point guards? Probably not. Maybe not. I mean, maybe he's only $4 million to get somebody else. Like, I mean, that's a hard one, by the way. Like, think about this one. I think, you know, if you're paying George Hill $30 million, you better, you know, $28 million, you better be able to make sure he's playing 78 games, 77 games, 76 games a year at 30, and he's 31 years old, right? And he's gonna be 34 at the end of the contract. You better be really certain you're getting a full 75 games a year out of him, because you don't have enough money to have a backup point guard. I mean, it's why I keep mentioning the name Corey Joseph, because Toronto's got a problem. They're gonna have to pay Kyle Lowry so that DeLon Wright becomes their backup point guard, because they don't have to pay him yet because he's a late first-round draft pick. You can't pay Corey Joseph. You just can't do it. You know, there's all this money. It's still percentage of cap. And by the way, everybody made a mistake – everybody made a mistake this last year's paying the price. He meant Greg Oden. Not Brandon Roy. I do think Joel Embiid is still very dangerous if you're banking on him. I feel like Rudy has really improved his driving to the basket. Rudy's just improved everything. In postcast, is it possible to include season series record with that team? Sure. I don't get it. Home phone together? Yeah, it's crazy. Do you think Neto has a potential to be a decent starting point guard and keep us afloat? I love Howell. I don't think he's a starter in the NBA. I could be wrong. I didn't think Gordon Hayward was going to be an all-star. Should Hayward get more shots? We're all right. There's a lot of questions in here. We're at 40 minutes. I think I hate to like not answer all the questions, but a lot of them are coming from the same people twice too. There's only like five people really watching this. They're just like robots coming back. It's all fake news. Thoughts on Alec Burks' recent play? Seems like he's been getting less Houdini moments, but the team plays well when he's on the court. Any thoughts? Well, the Houdini moments are a facade. They're an absolute farce. I always give my friend Craig Bullerjack a hard time that he's created a monster. I think Alec is shooting at about 30% at the rim over the last 10 games. Like, it's not a strength. It's like he's actually like it's just facts, guys. Like, he's not actually a good rim finisher. He never has been. He makes incredible plays, but he makes them way too difficult. I go back to a comment that Gordon Hayward made to me this year about the fact that he now is strong enough he can look at the rim when he's going to the basket and he's finishing better. Inside 5 feet this year, Alec Burks is shooting 39%. Like, it's not like – I mean, that's – might be last in the league would be my guess. If guys have taken 50 shots at the rim, I would guess there's nobody under 40%. If there is, I'd be really surprised. He's shooting 49% in the mid-range. His pull-up jumpers are at 64%. He's above the break three. He hit two last night to get him back up to 32%. When he has not been on the floor with Dante, we've been okay. He and Dante are not a good mix. Somebody commenting about Kawhi Leonard being great. Is Hill coming back soon? I have no idea. Tough run of point guards right here if your toe's hurting to be playing against James Harden and Russell Westbrook. So, you know, he was great against Jeremy Lin the other night, who's the worst defender in the league. So, you know, you got to just get right. Dio's not shooting threes very often. He hasn't made a lot. If I thought about doing a road to 50, I have the road to 50. I just haven't done it, updated it a little while. Somebody's still waiting to ski with me. If I finish this show and get some work done, I might get three in today before going golfing with my daughter. Side and trade questions about Gordon. I think I'm just going to wrap this up. There are too many questions. Oh, actually, I'm going to get to all of them. Hello from Iowa. Thank you. Since Golden State and San Antonio are last couple of games, will they be resting starters? I think that's unlikely because I think they're going to be battling for the number one seed, frankly. I think the number one seed's going to go down the final day. What does Dante need to do to take the next step? Just relax, play, and get an off season of conditioning. 43 minutes of Locked On Jazz is way too many. Go watch, listen to Locked On. Now you've wasted half your day. Go listen to Locked On NBA with Michael Lee. Thanks very much for tuning in. Email me if you want to have your company sponsored these editions of Locked On Jazz as we head down the playoff push. And hope you have a great day. This is all part of the Locked On Podcast Network.